Here was my big moment the other day.
Are you going to say it on the air or are you going
to
say it to me now?
No, I'll say it to you now. Maybe I'll put it in the show. Okay. This is my big moment at work. I'm in the lunchroom.
Okay.
One of my fellow employees was telling me that one day he took the panel off the door of his car, and he let people smoke in his car at that time. He took the panel off.
But he would take the panel off while they smoked, so they had like an open door, that and then open, they'd have to decide whether they wanted a door or to smoke.
That's right.
Okay.
So, but later, you know, so then he took the panel off, and he found like cigarettes and stuff had been thrown, like had been discarded down inside the door.
Boo.
By his friends.
Yeah.
And so I went, smokers are jerks. I just meant it like a silly comment. And then I realized that the big boss was walking by and he's a smoker. And then I just felt like, whoops, I just put my foot in my own ass.
Here's what I would have said if I was... Now, did he take the door off himself?
Yeah, he was just working on something.
Okay, because you know, if I was a mechanic and I had done that and I took the door out and all the cigarette butts and whatever whatnot came pouring out, I would have said to him, happy Ash Wednesday.
That's yes.
If Which it was we're recording Wednesday. It, the day, day after Ash Wednesday. But you said the story was in the past tense, so that would be what a wonderful joke to play on Ash Wednesday.
Such a pop because everyone would get it right away. Right. It's such a popular event. Such
the
a
day that we celebrate.
If you say
the work of Bruce Campbell.
If you say
Ash Wednesday.
If you say happy Ash Wednesday. Everyone will know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
Right away.
The day we celebrate the work of that child who's the Pokemon master.
That's right.
The day we celebrate Joe Quesada's short-lived Image comic series, Ash.
Let's start the show. Everyone, welcome to Sneaky Dragon. My name is David Dedrick.
I'm Ian Boothby, and this is take two. This is one of those shows where
we always do this. No one needs to know this. Yeah, we could pretend
they do
it didn't
need
happen.
To know. We tell the truth in the show.
We could just pretend it didn't
happen. No, we're not a show full of lies. That's what Completely Beatles was about. You every week coming on here and just making up shit, people believe in it. You know,
world renowned beaters.
Ringo
beaters
didn't make most of his money expert. Selling hats on the street. That is not true at all.
I just said beaters expert, so I'm well out of that.
Are you a beaters expert?
I'm
as
also
well?
A beaters expert. I know all about KitchenAid beaters. That's all I know, actually.
Well, what we were talking about before we got technically screwed up was you were laughing. I got into a discussion with you about laugh tracks and how before, when you see a live taping of a show, sometimes they ask you to do laughs, fake laughs, forced laughs that they incorporate into the... I've done that part. I've been like the warm-up guy at an audience and had to ask audiences to do that. And it's always a very strange sensation to get people to do that thing. But then you brought up... Sorry, just to recap the conversation you folks didn't hear. Dave was mentioning that we went to a taping together of a show called The Trolls that was a sketch comedy show.
Yeah.
Based on the group 3Dead Trolls in a Baggie.
Which is a... Do you think that's a good name for a comedy troupe?
You know what? They lasted for quite a while. And,
okay.
One of
I guess I'm wrong.
One of the members, Neil Gron, I worked with on my show, The 11th Hour.
He's
and
very
now
good. He's
I
very good.
He's the head writer of The Irrelevant Show, which I work on at CBC. But here was...
What you're saying is you don't have an opinion on that.
No. Here's my story from that taping.
Okay.
Here's my story of dread from that taping.
Okay.
It's like a living nightmare. Okay, so here's what it was. So we go to the taping, and we're watching, I think, like six episodes get shot, which
was
is a lot.
Was that many? That was
well,
a
that's
lot
how many
shows.
They did, yeah.
Wow.
Some involved nudity. There was
well, no wonder they made us laugh before it started.
Please do, yeah.
Yeah.
Get that together. So here's the thing. One of the members of the group was this guy, Frank Van Keeken, who was one of the original kids in the hall. And
I remember Frank.
He's done a lot of stuff. And we used to know each other through doing improv together. And one day he was talking about Lenny Bruce. And I went, I've never really heard any Lenny Bruce. And he went, listen, I'm going to lend you my Lenny Bruce tapes. But these are sacred to me. You've got a promise? You'll get these back to me in the same condition. You've got a promise.
Yeah.
You will get these tapes back to me in the exact condition that they're... You've got... yeah, I will. Okay. All right. I can't stress enough how... By the way, here comes an ambulance. Sorry. I'm supposed to say siren, and then you take a drink, and then you guess what it's going to be. I'm so flustered by...
The story.
Yeah. The story is still a tale of horror and woe, but we're going to wait till the siren goes by. Is it an ambulance? It is an ambulance.
It was an ambulance.
I win. I take a drink. Okay, so here, anyway. Setup is...
You didn't take a drink.
The setup is... I'm too...
Said,
I need to be dry mouthed for this
show
story.
Was a story. You said the show was...
I'm telling you
all
one of the
honesty.
Worst stories of my life, Dave.
Okay,
so anyway. So I take these tapes, and I'm sort of seeing this woman who also likes comedy.
Mm-hmm.
She listens to the tapes.
Yeah.
when we kind of have a falling out,
okay,
the tapes go missing.
Mm.
It's one of the things that goes missing. They're gone. Mm-hmm. I can't access them. I can't get to the tapes.
Yeah.
Well, luckily.
Wait, does she have them or are they just gone?
Who the fuck knows? They're gone. I don't know. Maybe she broke them out of malice. Maybe she gave them away. Maybe she just kept them.
Sure.
Any of these are completely an option that is on the table.
I'm just asking what the audience is thinking.
All I'm saying is the tapes that I said.
Yeah, you would. They were sacred tapes.
They're sacred tapes. Must be returned.
Must be returned.
Under all costs.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. But.
Now you have the thuggy cult after
lucky,
you.
No, lucky for me, though.
Okay, lucky for you.
Frank.
Yeah.
Moves out of town.
Okay.
Well, what a beautiful life this is.
Yeah.
I'm fine. And it's good because he's working on, I think he was working on Kids in the Hall, like the TV show. He became a writer for that.
Yeah.
Well, he's doing great.
Yeah.
I'm doing fine.
Yeah.
Life's great. I think like 3 years later.
Mm-hmm.
The Trolls show is going to happen. Oh, okay, well, that's great because I like the 3 Dead Trolls in a Baggie. I'm going to go to this taping with my friend David. Everything's going to be fantastic. And then I see their special guest on the show is Frank Van Keeken. Well, there's a bit of me that goes, oh, no. But then I think, this guy's now doing great.
Yeah.
He doesn't need those tapes.
He doesn't need
Life is fine. Everything's good.
Sure.
By the way, I'm not going backstage. How am I going to run into him?
Yeah.
He's doing the fucking show.
Yeah.
I'm literally in the back row of the audience.
We were quite a ways back.
We were in the back row.
We were,
the very back row. It was you, me. Lisa was there.
Yep.
I don't know who else was there. But it was, but I do know Lisa was there.
Yeah, Lisa was there. I just don't remember if. Was your significant other there?
Could have been. Very well could have been at the time. So anyway, we were watching the show. We're enjoying the comedy.
Yeah.
We're having a good old laugh.
We were having we laugh before the show?
Frank.
We laughed during the show.
Frank comes out and he's doing a monologue.
Okay.
Well, it's going great. And then, you know, at the end of the monologue, he goes, cut. He doesn't go cut. The director goes, cut.
Cut.
The lights go down.
Yeah.
He looks in the audience. He sees me. Hey, where are my tapes? Hey, whole audience looks at me
yes.
as the guy who did not return that guy's tapes.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure whether I got it from you or someone else.
I did make you some Lenny Bruce tapes.
I think that's what happened. I found out the albums and you made me the tapes.
Yep.
And I gave those to him.
Yeah.
And we have worked since on other things. We worked on a sitcom together
all
called
fine.
Big Sound.
Yeah.
He hired me for that.
Mm.
And Greg Evigan from BJ and the Bear.
Sure.
There you go. Dropping that name.
It was the '70s. You could do a show about a blowjob and a bear.
That's right. And then it moved on from there. He was in My Two Dads. Then he was in Tech War. He was in like whatever is the worst show of whatever era you were in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And many genres. But a very, very nice guy. And that trend continued with that show that we were doing, too.
Is that right?
Wasn't, yep. It was a behind-the-scenes in the music industry, which was what we were doing, behind-the-scenes shows. And,
Was it kind of like a Larry
Sanders
show?
It sure as fuck was. That's what everyone did.
Mm.
And there you go. The one bright side to it, it was not a great experience. But the one bright side...
I was going to say the Larry Drake show, but Larry Sanders works, too.
Yeah. Okay. Was that... No, very good. The one very cool thing about it, though, was my boss, the producer of the show, was David Steinberg.
Okay.
So that was neat, who has all been kind of like a, you know, if you grew up in Canada, he's one of the comedy icons.
Sure.
So, yeah, that was very
great
cool.
Great show with Martin Short.
And I got to jam. Well, what happened was I was actually writing partners with this guy, Roger Fredericks, who's a good friend of mine, and we wrote together on a lot of stuff.
I consider him a friend as well.
Very good.
But he's a better friend of yours.
Well, he's
than
a
he is
writing friend of mine as well. So we are we are workmates as well as in real life chums.
Playmates.
He was one of my best men at my wedding. I don't remember who the other guy was.
Some
hobo.
Some loser. You brought in. To
look it up online. There's a video there that someone probably stripped the sound out of. Okay. But here was the nice thing about it was Roger and I were working on the show together. They hired us as a team, writing team.
Yep.
We both did not have a good time writing on the show. And then both of us at that time lost our dads. Our dads were in their last couple of months.
Sure.
And so we both left to kind of be with our families. And
once is sad, twice is careless.
there you go. Enough time has passed for that to be okay. So we left the show and it was like, you know, we didn't really like this stuff that we had our name on the show because on that kind of show, the whole room writes something and then you get your name on it randomly. That's how it goes. But we came back because they needed an extra script. And by that point, you know, things were a little bit better with us. And we actually got to write something for real us that we actually wrote. So that felt good. And we got to jam a little bit with David Steinberg, which also felt really good.
Nice.
And so, yeah, that was a good experience. And then later on, we were told by him that it was their most fun episode to do.
Oh,
so
that's great.
Yeah. That's hooray. Great. Good experience in the very end. And as I like to point out, he's the guy who You're So Vain is about.
David Steinberg is?
That is correct.
Was that finally revealed by... Because she just revealed, like in the last year, who the actual person was.
Okay. Was it Steinberg?
I don't remember.
Because she has revealed before that it was Steinberg.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Might have she been mad at Steinberg? Maybe she just says it every decade at someone she's mad at.
Okay.
Because originally it was Mick Jagger.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knew that.
Everyone sort of knew that. And then
in the 80s, it changed. It was Warren Beatty.
That was the assumption.
Then 90s came.
Did she say that it was Warren Beatty, or was that the assumption?
She wrote an article about it.
She wrote an article going, it was Warren Beatty?
It was like a 800-word essay in Esquire magazine.
Okay.
The 90s.
Was it graded as an essay? Did it have to have the three statements off the top?
You had introduction.
Yeah.
Then your body. Three paragraphs. Then your conclusion.
Right.
It summarized the whole thing. Exactly right. And if you do that in college, you will get an F on your essay.
Oh, good.
That is a true fact.
All right.
Because that happened to me. I didn't get an F, but I got a C minus. And I was like, what the F? Because I never got anything less than an A. I was devastated.
Yeah, what the F? Do you think I'm a C?
That's right. And I was like...
Minus?
I was so devastated. Then the teacher said, he goes, before he handed it to me, he says, is this your first essay for college? And I said, yeah. And he goes, good job. And he gave it to me. I walked out of the room, looked at it. It was a C minus. My stomach just sank like right down to
the floor. Well, what's the system that you've got to do a college essay with? Is this free form?
Yeah, way more free
form. Wiggly piggly?
Just, you still need like an introduction, but you don't follow that.
Why the hell did you get taught that bullshit?
I don't know.
Where else will you need to write an essay aside from
the 1-3-1
college
system?
Yeah,
that's right. It's very rare in life that
and
people invite.
I always found like with the essay thing that the first and the last were the same thing. So the invention of fudge was important to North America.
Yeah.
You know, these three reasons. So to conclude, that's why the invention of fudge was important to North America. What a waste of a sentence this second thing has been.
You can understand why that would. Like, because really, you don't write a lot of essays in high school. But as soon as you get started taking English classes in university, then you are writing essays like nobody's business.
Yeah, but if you're
writing... And how boring that would be for your professor or TAs, who's ever marking these things, to read 400 essays that all follow the 1-3-1 pattern.
I got that. But to me that 1-3-1 bullshit, I mean, it's a haiku, basically, you're writing. But how 1 and 1 were always the same, right?
Yeah.
The start and the end.
You're supposed to.
Yeah, but
that's
why I think that's stupid. It's like what you should do if you're actually writing an essay, say you want to write an article for a magazine. What you should teach someone is setup is number one. Give the reasons in the middle.
Yep.
And the end answers the question that you asked in the setup. So it's just like...
You can do that. Or what I would do with my essays that I did way better on was I would ask a question in the final part of it. I would bring up a different fact and sort of propose that as an interesting... thing.
Okay, that's
and then I would
go.
Leave there. I would kind of end it like a Coen's Brother film.
Okay.
But yeah, I just found that was way more successful that if you didn't follow that really strict way of that you're taught in high school,
you
just kind of let your freak flag fly, that you did way better with, you know, it helped that I was smart and had good ideas. Like if you just have a bunch of garbage and you write it down on a piece of paper and hand it to the teacher, it doesn't matter how you do it. If it's garbage, you're going to get a bad mark.
It's too bad because if you did the alternate method, which is the asking the question and answering it at the end, I mean, that's good for even filmmaking, for crying out loud. That's Sunset Boulevard. You know, it's like,
why is this guy floating
in the pool?
Yeah.
And then you end with, that's why the guy was floating in the pool.
Yeah.
Aren't you happy? Yeah, this was for a reason, you know?
No, that works too. Although I do like films that end with a question as well.
Do you like, now, have you seen Hail Caesar?
I have not seen Hail Caesar.
All right, without...
I had some friends who saw it.
Yeah.
People at work, actually. I'll call them friends.
And me. Go ahead.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, okay, a friend as well.
Okay.
And then,
okay. Your work friends. Here's how we should differentiate, Dave. Your work friends.
Yeah.
I'm your friend.
Yes, you're my
okay.
Very
and
good
your
friend.
Work friends are friends with benefits because you share
health
benefits
right.
and various other things at work.
You're right.
So tell me about your friends with benefits and what they thought of the thing.
Well, they were disappointed.
Yeah,
they felt that there were lots of great scenes.
Absolutely.
In the film, lots of really hilarious stuff.
Fantastic. Makes for a good trailer.
But nothing that hung together as a film.
And nothing that was concluded.
And I said what you said. Your version, which was that...
Fuck this.
Your review, your two-word review of that film, fuck this. I said, what about a three-word review? And you said, fuck this shit. I was like, I'll take it. And said, can you grade it? And then, but no, I said yours, which was, I thought was interesting, which is you said, you know, their current trend, you know, of like in, say, in No Country for Old Men, of ending films without ending the film, the sort of stopping the movie at some point, you know, like when I saw No Country for Old Men in the theater, I'll admit this is a bad thing. I drifted off. My mind wandered during Tommy Lee Jones' monologue at the end of the film.
Because it's no film for old men.
That's right. I'm too old for this movie, I thought. And so, no, I enjoyed the film, but then that scene came, and it was after a really exciting scene with that guy.
Yeah. Xavier.
Bardem.
Bardem,
yeah. His scene with the wife and you know, and being in the accident and all that stuff like that. And it's quite exciting.
Yep.
And very visceral. And then it cuts to Tommy Lee Jones musing.
Yep.
And so my mind kind of drifted off, and I was thinking about the scene or whatever, and then the credits started.
Yep.
And I was just like, what? I missed the movie. I missed the whole thing. So I had to watch it all over again to get to that scene.
I would like to see attention. Like the last basically four Coen Brothers movies. I would like the camera pointed at the audience and just see their reaction when the credits come up.
What would you do?
As they all like just look at each other and just like, I guess. Because that really was what the audience was like as everyone going in was like, ooh, and everyone leaving was, hey, well, I guess, you know, there
that's
was
exactly what
good stuff, I guess.
What my friend with benefits said at work was the audience really wanted it to work. They went there and they're really excited about seeing this film.
And they set up all these characters that you really wanted. It was basically like someone says to you, hey, Dave, do you like bacon?
Mm-hmm.
Do you like a nice sizzling thing of bacon?
Yeah.
I got a pan for bacon and I bought this big rashers of bacon.
Yeah. You got a skillet.
Yeah.
And you're going to kill it.
Anyway. So look at that bike over there. Do you notice that old lady's riding the bike, right? And she's going down a rocky road. That's a dangerous road.
Yeah, that's pretty
dangerous. I don't even know what's going to happen with that. Anyway, here's a duck. And this duck can say one word, and that word is stop. And so let's watch a guy talk on the phone for a bit. He's talking to his wife. Credits. What'd you think of that?
Mm.
It's a lot of interesting things. Bacon. Yeah. Do you like that scene with the bacon almost being made and the bike? And we almost saw what happened to the lady and that duck who never actually talked to anybody, even though it could say one word. Mm. That guy was talking on the phone to his wife, all right.
It's interesting because...
Well shot. Well, in focus and color. Beautiful. Good costumes. Gorgeous. A lot of budget.
It's
what the fuck?
Well, you know, I do think Hollywood likes to stroke its own, you know, pat itself on the back. So films like that are going to be interesting to Hollywood.
It's an interesting idea of like, you know, and it's based in reality. Like a Ben-Hur type thing.
It's based in reality. But there really was a, you know, they're like MGM.
Mannix, the guy Mannix.
Eddie Mannix, yeah. Eddie Mannix, who was a famous fixer.
And probably murdered George Reeves. Probably.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why
have
would
you seen
that?
Hollywoodland?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, that's basically about him. Basically.
I was so disappointed it wasn't based on the Gene Deitch comics that I just didn't know.
Well, and also based on the sign that used to be Hollywoodland. You look him up. There are very few people as evil as that guy.
He's a horrible
man.
Mannix,
yeah.
Killed his girlfriend.
Horrible.
Punched her in the stomach every day.
Like basically, like, okay, so you take someone, okay, so basically let's say, you know, you decide, you know what, I'm going to make a Coen Brothers type movie about the music industry. I'm going to have Phil Spector in it. Okay, that's great. And you never bring up that. You know, or like Robert Blake, and you go like, but I'm not going to mention how things worked up at the end at all. And by the way, I'm going to make them the good guy, completely the good guy, even though they do some stuff that you'd go like, oh, that's clearly the bad guy. But you've made them the good guy. It's very weird.
So they have a weird sense of humor. I mean, that's part of the thing. To be honest with you, I can't think of any of their comedies that I'd like very much.
Like, Arizona?
I don't like that movie.
Oh, I like Raising Arizona.
I falls flat for me.
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
It's okay.
I like Coen Brothers there quite a bit.
It's okay.
Yeah.
I prefer like Miller's Crossing.
Hudsucker Proxy you don't like?
Don't like that.
No. I like that quite a bit. I got an apron made that looks like that actually for Christmas.
See, but, they just, none of them work for me because their sense of humor doesn't gel with my fantastic sense of humor that's so impeccable.
Here's the thing about those three movies.
All listeners to the show know how great my sense of humor is.
Yeah, here's something about all three of those movies. They had endings.
Yeah.
And the characters went on arcs and they did a thing. Like
But I would rather watch Blood Simple, Miller's Crossing, Barton Fink, even the Barton Fink. Barton Fink's sort of a comedy, I guess, but it's really a dark, really dark comedy.
Man Who Wasn't There, I like too, even though some people don't care for that one that much.
I like that one. I like The Big Lebowski, which is more of a comedy.
That's definitely a comedy.
It's comedy with drama in it, you know, so it kind of...
Well, they all have drama in it. They all got sadness in them. They all got darkness.
But you wouldn't call Fargo a comedy, even though it has like funny situations in it.
Oh boy, yeah, that is a tough one. There's... I mean, but
it has comedy elements.
Think about the amount of laughs you get in Fargo.
Yeah,
you
know, it's great.
More than in most comedies.
But at the same time, it's more of a crime movie, more of a crime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's investing in crime and funny things happen, but you know, No Country for Old Men, you laugh at that. You laugh during that film, but it's.
I don't know. Did you watch this season of Fargo?
No, I have not watched any seasons of Fargo. Okay.
There's I'm not going to spoil the season of Fargo, but there's a huge element. Something enormous and life-changing occurs.
Mm-hmm.
And people see it and go, oh, that's a, wow. And never addressed it. I mean, that's a real Coen Brothers type thing. And then they just all move on with their lives and things go on. They set it up, they pay it off. Then nothing really happens. But it's good. It works. But at least there's a setup and a payoff. Yeah. And I don't know. I think because this was so sold as a comedy. I mean, it's clearly a comedy. They just, everyone's mugging to the goddamn camera through the whole fucking thing, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But like, you can't just do setups, man.
No.
And that's basically what you've done.
Okay.
And even like the characters that you love, they make you fall in love with certain characters. You're like, oh, that couple. Oh, man, what's the deal? Well, you know, this person has certain skills. What can they do? This, this, and this. Wow, that'll come in really handy when we don't do anything with them. What the fudge? Why did you even bring that up then? What are we doing here?
I was watching on YouTube a little film.
What's on YouTube now? I haven't checked it for a while. What's on there now?
Cats.
They put the musical Cats on there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's fallen in public domain.
Good. And there's a making of No Country for Old Men. And it has an interview with Joel and Ethan Coen, one of whom talks way more than the other. But then they're talking about the wife of the character played by Josh Brolin. Who's actually a Scottish actress. I didn't realize that till I heard her interviewed in the... I just assumed she was American and maybe from the South because she has a Southern accent.
Yeah,
exactly. And so they're talking about her and they say, you know, she lives in a mobile home and, you know, works at Walmart. And I think most people in America can understand that. And then they start laughing uncontrollably at this joke. And to me, that kind of summarizes them. Like, you get them or you don't get the sense of humor. And I guess it doesn't quite work for me. I like their serious films, but I just find all their comedies. And I'll put The Lady Killers in that.
Ooh,
I'll put Burn Before Reading in that.
Oh, yeah, that was rough.
I'll put, the other films that I mentioned already.
Yeah.
Into that category. I just find that they just don't quite, I don't know, there's something, I think, and Crime Wave, the film they did with Ted Raimi.
Okay.
I mean, Sam Raimi.
Bruce Campbell's in that one.
Yes.
Is that the one shot one? Like done in one shot? Or am I thinking of a different one?
I don't think so.
What was the one that was like done in like one long shot?
The whole movie?
Yeah, pretty much. They tried to do like kind of a rope type deal. Keep talking.
I don't think it's that film. I don't
look it up. Because there is a Bruce Campbell film that's like that was done around that same era.
Wow.
That was a heist film and you basically follow the heist car through all the things that it goes through. But please continue.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it is. But yeah, and when I was watching that, I just realized that their sense of humor is they really think the Three Stooges are funny,
and I
don't. And that's where we kind of break apart in our comedy tangents. We both head off in different...
And yet you like the Marx Brothers.
Yeah, but that's not the Three Stooges.
What do you think is the difference between the Three Stooges and the Marx Brothers?
Like, there's no kind of wordplay or any sort of like... There's no...
And yet, do you like a Laurel and Hardy?
Not that much.
But you like a Buster Keaton, and that there's no wordplay with Buster Keaton.
That's true.
That's all physical comedy, and
that's true.
People getting hurt.
Yes, but people aren't punching each other. It's just someone who's clumsy, you know. Like he does. Maybe he gets punched once in a while, but most of the time, it's just either he does something incredible, you know, to get away from someone, or you know, or he's incredibly strangely clumsy that he can't walk out a door without falling over something.
Yeah, I'm not seeing what this film was. I'll look up what I know right now. Yes, I know some of you are screaming at the... As you did with Pale Rider last time.
But we said Pale Rider.
Yeah, Pale Rider.
I suggested Pale Rider.
Right.
We said High Plains Drifter, which, by the way, is a supernatural Western. It's called that. And I also said, or maybe Pale Rider. I didn't know what you were talking about. I gave you two.
Right.
I gave you two.
I will find out which one I'm talking about.
People are jumping down my throat.
I'll put it on our darn Facebook page. We'll do that.
Let's just say it was Gavin Pitts who's been on our show.
I mean,
Gavin,
you've got
come on.
The Three Stooges basically do physical comedy. Okay, but here's what they do. They do physical comedy.
Yeah.
With goddamn annoying voices, so, like all of them are unpleasant. You don't like any of them. Like, whereas, like a Buster Keaton, That poor slob just wants to get this thing done and life keeps kicking him in the teeth.
But maybe it's me, but to me, his acrobatics are artful or way more... are impressive, you know, with the things that he does. Whereas right. Three Stooges are just whacking each other and poking each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's I could do that with my brothers.
Well, isn't the Three Stooges basically like brother comedy? Like, isn't this the kind of things that, like, they look like three brothers who are hurting each other because that's what brothers do, but they're always, you're going like, one of these guys leave each other because they're basically brothers.
Yeah.
You know, when they did do the movie, they grew up together in the orphanage, and that was the reason they were together. They had to justify it in some degree.
This is the remake.
The Will Sasso one. That was the one that was supposed to be with, like, Sean Penn and, like, all these other, like, you know, top-of-the-line actors, and this is going to be amazing. And then they went, well, maybe not them. Maybe, and then you get to Will Sasso, who's fine. And Will Sasso is a great guy, and he has done a lot of work with us, and he's been really sweet. But yeah, you know, it's weird. The Three Stooges movie, which is done by the guys, again, more brothers, Farrelly Brothers, is better than you think it will be.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think the Sean Penn Three Stooges film was We're No Angels, one he did with Robert De Niro.
Which was done here in Vancouver.
Was it?
Yes, it was.
Yes.
As all movies that were shot in Vancouver, I've got to say that was shot in Vancouver. Just as Canadians, whenever you mention a Canadian, we have to go,
that's true.
They're Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say the best Marx Brothers movie that's not a Marx Brothers movie.
Okay.
That is called Brain Donors.
Brain Donors.
It went by another name as well, and it's the lead actor from Barton Fink. Who is
John Turturro?
John Turturro. Okay. And I believe, I'm trying to think if Mel Smith is one of the guys in it who is from the British Not actor. The 9 O'Clock News. Yeah, and there's another guy, and they basically just break down into the archetypes of the Marx Brothers. Mm. And
okay.
Yeah, it's again, it that is a film that you'll go, oh, this is way better than I thought it would be.
Mm.
Check it out if you get a chance. And The Three Stooges? Slightly better than you thought it would be. But if you don't like the Three Stooges, why are you watching that damn movie?
Yeah,
there's no reason.
I'm not. Yeah, I never
was a Stooge guy.
As a kid, there's things that you know are in the, what's the word I'm looking for? They're in the canon, you know, that you have to see.
Right.
You know, like, so Laurel and Hardy,
Flying Lenses.
Charlie Chaplin. Like, if you're into comedy, then if you haven't seen a Marx Brothers film and you consider yourself a person who loves comedy, then no, you're not. Like, you're missing a huge part of your education, whether if you haven't seen a silent film comedian, then get your kid. You know, you're not really a, you know, that's, you know, so you watch these films and then you're like, okay, well, I've seen that now. I've seen the Marx Brothers. I've seen the Ritz Brothers. I've seen the Abbott and Costello. I've seen the Three Stooges films. Yeah. I've watched all these films. Some of them are good. Some of them aren't good. Like Abbott and Costello obviously were to someone's taste at a time.
And some, like, okay, Charlie Chaplin to me, I acknowledge is a genius.
Yeah.
I don't give a damn. Like, I watch his films. For you, I just don't, it does nothing for me. Harold Lloyd.
Have you seen Modern Times?
Let me just say this.
Okay.
Harold Lloyd, I see, and I go, it really connects with me for some reason. Okay. I really like his stuff. Sure. Have I seen Modern Times? Probably in the past, I have.
Okay.
I've seen The Great Dictator. I've seen Modern Times. I think I've seen most, I believe.
Okay.
Why do you think that's his best?
I do think it's his best. I think it's one that if I was going to say to someone, they say, I don't like Chaplin, I'd say, well, you should either watch City Lights or Modern
Times. Yeah, it's not don't like Chaplin.
Yeah.
Just
it doesn't,
not
it just leaves
laughing.
You cold.
Yeah, I watch it and go like, that's good.
Mm.
That's quite good.
Yeah.
But there and Buster Keaton, I'm kind of in awe of something like a Sherlock Jr. and just go, how the fuck are you doing it? It's almost like I'm not laughing as much as I'm watching a magician and trying to figure out, how did he do that? Or that was too dangerous. He shouldn't have done that, even for a laugh.
Yeah.
That could have killed you. Don't risk your life for that, Buster Keaton.
Mm-hmm.
No. Oh, no. I get that with a lot of the old films. Like, I see a Gene Kelly, like, doing these incredibly dangerous moves and just go, stop it, Gene Kelly.
Yeah.
This isn't worth your while.
Of course it is.
No.
Of course it is.
Come on, Jackie Chan. We'll like you even if you don't risk your life.
Oh, it makes it better that he does it, though.
Okay.
Makes it so much better.
Fair enough.
Incredible. Yeah, I mean, yeah, so if you see, like, have you ever seen the Ritz Brothers?
Oh, yeah, I've seen, like, YouTube clips, yeah.
Okay, it's not that great. Wheeler and Woolsey? That was a long time ago.
I liked
Eddie Cantor.
You know what I used to like was the let's get old timey here. Mm-hmm.
We are old timey. I'm mentioning very old timey things.
I like the Abbott and Costello TV show. I liked when they came out at the beginning and just talked to the audience. Mm-hmm. I liked when the Mighty Boosh ripped that off for their show. And we're like, that's a good device. It's just coming up. Well, how you doing?
Jack Benny did that too.
Yeah, we're going to do a little show today. And we're going to go to the pet store today. Oh, I'm going to the pet store. Yeah, what I like about a pet store is a blah, 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 blah,
blah. Yeah, that Jack Benny show did that as well. The TV show did that as well. He would come out in front of a curtain and talk to you as the... And I guess that was sort of a holdover from the radio show that you needed to have him talk to you.
Right. Otherwise, how would you know where you're at?
Well, how would you know who he is? You know, like, you know, I guess, I don't know. It's weird.
Actually, and George Burns and Gracie Allen, George knew he was in a TV show. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how many other shows just would break the fourth wall in the show itself. But, you know, the classic bit is, you know, he's with Gracie and she's going to go talk to her girlfriend. And he's like, okay, well, I'll see you later. And he's like, well, our show's on right now. Let me just see what she's up to. So he turns on the TV and just watches her to see what she's doing.
That's clever.
So later, when he portrays God in a movie, maybe he was God then as well. He seems to have the power to watch over everybody.
God's eye view. God's eye view. Yeah, no, it's maybe what we should do for next show is put together our top five comedians.
Okay.
Or comedy things.
Sure. Would you want? Okay, that's different. All right, top five comedians. Now, what do you consider? What do you consider a comedian? Do you consider that a comedy actor, or do they have to be like a comedian?
I'm thinking of like you could say the Marx Brothers as part of that. So as a unit, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Because
how about this? How about we do this? Okay. How about we do each five things that we think people should check out comedy wise? Could be a comedian. Okay. Could be a movie. Could be anything. You know, but it's like you should check this out.
Gee, I think our whole show is that, but okay.
Yeah,
really.
But we will specify time. That's what we're gonna do.
Okay, let's do that for next week.
All right,
let's put that.
Let's make that a blood oath. So I've got the knife phones. Out. Oh, all right, we're gonna slice there. All right.
Oh my
God.
All right.
Oh no, I cut too deep.
You.
My hand's gone. Shit. Okay. I'm just gonna take some masking tape and try to fix this. Okay. All right. You vamp.
I'm gonna vamp while you. Can I just describe what you're doing?
Sure. Go ahead.
Because we kind of ended. It's kind of hard to make unfair to make me vamp while we've ended the conversation on a.
Yeah, that worked actually. I got it in time.
Thank you.
Done. It's starting to clot.
Thanks for coming back in. I was struggling there. Sorry. I just felt like it's okay if I was in the middle of a conversation, I could vamp, but, you know, I would feel kind of unfair if I just took over
the
show.
Speaking of people who sing about vamps, Cher, on her old show.
Gypsies, Vamps, and Thieves?
Well, there was another song about, I think she's a vamp, and ba-ba-da-ba, and it wasn't, that's why the lady's a vamp. There was actually vamp-related things. Every show, she would sing a song.
Yes.
And she would sing a song, and she'd be like, a lot of clothes on. And she would sing a song directly to the audience. Okay. And she'd sing a song.
Okay.
And then about a minute and a half in,
Ba-doom!
Takes it off, shows a lot of flesh.
Yeah.
Now does a sexy version of that song that she was singing. Week after week after week after week, she did it, and people couldn't get enough of it.
You can't have that
kind of repetition nowadays.
Did they have a regular show, or were they just like a summer replacement show all the time?
Are you talking Sonny and Cher?
Yeah.
Sonny and Cher were a regular show. Then they broke up.
Yeah.
Then Sonny had his own show.
Okay.
Tanked. Then Cher had her own show, did better than Sonny's show, but was never as popular as Sonny and Cher. And I think, maybe I'm wrong, but I think they might have gotten back together again, not romantically, but like because they went business-wise, let's just do the fucking show that works, brought that back, and then people went, yeah, we're kind of good. And like, oh, all right, well, then we'll be over here if you need.
Because by that point, Donnie and Marie had taken over that position.
Yeah. Oh, God. I saw. Okay, here's the thing.
Sounds serious.
I'm as serious as a disturbing thing.
Okay.
So every so often, I'll be on YouTube as we are, and to say, oh, you, because I think I was watching Donnie and Marie's Star Wars tribute.
Okay.
Because I was like, I haven't seen this, and it was interesting, and Paul Lynn's in it, and I'm like, I'm on board.
Yeah.
I'm 100%. Sure. It's terrible. And I'm on board. And somehow you had the rights to all these, everything except for James Earl Jones' voice. So Darth Vader sounds like this kind of. Anyway, should have just had Paul Lynn doing the voice of Darth Vader.
Yeah.
I'm your father. So that would have been great. So.
It's a good Paul Lynn, by the way.
It's a great Tatooine. Anyway, not as good. So it linked me to another thing. It was like Donnie and Marie on the Brady Bunch variety show. Okay.
I don't remember that.
So here's the scene from the Brady Bunch. Well, do you remember the Brady Bunch had a variety show?
No.
Oh, Dave, let me take you back. After the Brady Bunch went off the air, they had a couple of things. They had an animated series with the Brady Kids where they had like a crow that was magic that was their friend.
Wow.
Then here's what they did. Because variety shows were so popular with Donnie and Marie and that of thing, they went, we're going to do the Brady Bunch variety show. And the conceit was that because they'd sung on the show, the Brady Show, they're now got their own variety show.
They can sing, like, sing it up.
And they basically did the same thing as the Donnie and Marie show, except every so often would cut back to the house, which didn't look anything like the house from the show.
Yeah.
And they'd set up bits at the house based on what they were going through that week. And instead of Donnie and Marie, which had like these women skating, they had the Aquabelles, I believe. And so they basically had, you know, just swimmers, sexy swimmers swimming around. And often, you know, Peter or Greg would be like, hey, ladies, how you doing? And someone would kick them into the pool. And oh, my gosh, good fun.
Hijinks.
And Jan, the actress played Jan, Eve Plum went, no. And so they got fake Jan who's on there. And if you see the Simpsons parody of this, Lisa is replaced by fake Lisa.
Oh, okay.
Who's a sexier looking Lisa. Okay. So this is the sketch. Here's how it begins.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Just to go back a little bit.
Ask me any questions about this. One of my favorite topics in the world. Please continue.
Okay.
You can see the kids not on board with this. You can see the actress played Florence Henderson.
Yeah.
Totally on board.
Yeah.
You can see the dad kind of on board.
Okay. It's a paycheck.
You can see Greg fully on board. Everyone else, I got nothing else in my life. I got to do this.
Yeah.
Here's the song. Okay. But continue.
So, okay. So we're setting up here. This is a sketch. Mm-hmm. On the Brady Bunch variety show,
yes,
featuring
yes.
Donnie and Marie.
Well, here we go.
All right.
Here's how it goes.
But actually features Donnie and Marie.
Yeah. Here's how it goes.
Okay.
So the sketch begins at the Brady house. Looks nothing like the Brady house.
Okay.
And Greg is playing a song on guitar. He's practicing a song. And then Marcia enters with a warped record in her hand.
Mm.
Like melted.
Yes.
And he's like, what happened to your Led Zeppelin album? Okay.
Okay.
So what she says is, Dad.
Oh.
And like, oh, he hates the music of today.
I thought he was making a popcorn bowl with a record.
No, he was not. He just hates the music of today so much
mm.
that he melted the record. Not broke it. Melted this Led Zeppelin
yeah.
record, late 70s.
He's an architect.
That's what you do. Architect of his own demise. So so Greg goes, you know, probably a dad's dad did the same thing with his Elvis Presley records. Oh, Greg, that's not the case at all. No, they used to be young like us, Mom and Dad. Do you think they were? Yeah, and you know something? They used to hang, you know, and she goes, where? They'd hang out at the discotheque? Well, not the discotheque, sis, but they'd hang out at the roller rink. Okay, that's the setup.
Okay.
So now we're flashing to the 50s.
So.
Okay. So it's...
Does the screen get wavy and go back, or do they just cut?
I think they just cut to the fucking thing. Okay. Who fucking cares? So it basically becomes a sketch of tough kids, tough Grease-style kids,
yeah.
who are portrayed by the Brady boys mm. and the dad,
yeah.
And then you got Donnie as well.
This is awkward.
It's awkward.
It feels very
awkward. And then on the other side, you got the sexy girls, and they're the Brady girls.
Are they wearing, like,
and
poodle Marie. Skirts?
Well, no, not... maybe they were wearing poodle skirts, but they're at the roller rink, and then it's the Brady girls, and then you got Marie.
Mm-hmm.
So... the guys are like doing the cool things, you know, sure. John Travolta, whatever. And then they see the girls like, hey, check out those girls. Yeah, what a bunch of dishes. And they're like, they're your sisters. They're your sisters. For some of you, they're your fictional sisters. For some of you, they're your real sisters. What are you doing? What are you doing? The whole premise for this, you can't do this at all. No, nix, no, in no way, shape, or form can you do this. Get some Aquabelles up here. They can put some skates on them. Maybe you'll be able to pull this shit off, and then the girls can heckle you from the distance.
Yeah.
But you cannot have, look at those sexy ladies. Let's show them a thing or two, and then maybe we'll get to kiss our sisters. What the fuck? What are you doing? 70s TV? Boo.
Wow.
Boo. Yeah.
Well, as we already established, 70s TV.
Yeah. I'll try and put that clip up. See what you all think.
Yeah, I'm curious to see it now.
Yeah, the Bradys went from... Okay, so the Bradys went from the Brady Bunch.
Brady Bunch TV show.
The Brady Kids.
Okay.
The Brady Bunch Variety Hour.
Okay.
It's
a slow descent here.
The Brady Brides...
Ooh.
Brady Brides were Jan and Marcia. Both fell in love with two very different guys. One's a slob. One's a snob. They got to live together. Oh, brother. Because the show at the time that was very popular
yeah.
was Three's Company, Sexual Double Entendres. Okay, so.
With the yin-yang.
There you go. So that goes on. Next thing that comes out.
Yep.
A Very Brady Christmas. I might be missing some in this, but A Very Brady Christmas. Now, A Very Brady Christmas, everyone's miserable. Things are terrible.
Yeah.
Everyone's breaking up. Ooh. The Brady Brides are going to break up with their Brady men.
Yeah.
Things are shit. But then I think someone almost dies. Carol sings a song. They all bond. Life goes on. Things are fantastic. Okay.
Is it Alice? Is it Alice who almost dies?
No, I think Alice just is wisecracking. The whole thing. Okay. She might be marrying Sam at that point.
Okay.
Oh, I think she broke up with Sam. So she was upset for that too. Breaking up with Sam.
Wow.
So, okay. So then we go from there to, I think at that time, maybe the Brady movie comes out. And so people kind of get that, oh, that's the fun. And there's at least three Brady movies. There's the Brady Bunch movie. There's the one where they go to Hawaii, a Very Brady sequel. And then there's one where Mr. Brady becomes president. And that's in the genre of, it's all just straight out full crazy parody comedy. So those are those three films.
So those three films.
Yeah. That's with Shelley Long and Gary Cole.
They did three of those films?
They did. They did one that was made for TV, which was the one where he becomes president.
Oh, okay. I've only seen one of them.
And somehow he becomes president because he designs a house that somehow makes, that guy's good. He should be president. He becomes president.
He designed a White House.
One of the jokes that I did like, that they had in the Brady movies was he only could design that one house, which is the house that he was in.
That's right.
Over and over again. Okay, so we can't do crazy comedy anymore, says mm-hmm. the main cast,
yeah.
but we all need work. So they do a show called The Bradys. Now, here's what happens on The Bradys.
All right.
Is this a reality
show?
No. Okay. Oh, that comes later. Okay. You stop jumping ahead. Yeah, Peter Criss gets his reality show. Yeah, that's right.
He and America's Next Top Model.
Was that right? Was he like with? It was close to that. It was like a dating one, Bachelor, but Data Brady or something like that. That's what the reality one was.
Because then he had an actual reality show where he was married to, I can't remember her name, but she was like the first winner.
Oh, was
winner,
that the deal? It wasn't
the first winner.
It was just showing what his life was like. I never really saw that.
They were in together in the house show, the show where a bunch of celebrities live in a house together.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that show? It used to be on.
Yep.
And then I guess they hooked up on that show, and then they had their own. They got married, and then they had their own reality show.
And they had some Brady
show.
Pun though to the name, like, or was it a play on his name Knight, being Chris Knight, and so something like a good night. Anyway, okay, so the Bradys though. So Bobby was the youngest of the Brady
That's
boys.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
So
Mike Lookinland.
Mike Lookinland, exactly. So he, by the way, we have fake Jan has left and a real Jan has come on.
Okay.
And in the last, the Christmas one, we have fake Cindy because Cindy had enough of that shit. So every so often it rotates in and out. Okay. So Bobby likes riding race cars. Good for him.
Likes driving race cars.
Likes riding in them, likes driving in them, likes just being in a race car.
Okay.
So he drives a race car.
Sure.
Race car crashes. Bobby's in a wheelchair now.
What?
Yeah, paraplegic. So
this is the Bradys.
This is the Bradys. Everyone. So it's now a drama. They're doing it as basically people called it Brady something. So it was like dealing with everyone's depressed.
I don't like it.
They do a little bit of wisecracking, but for the most part, it's a goddamn bummer.
Yeah.
So that's how.
Do they ever do a cooking show called The Brady Brunch?
I'm trying to remember if they. You know what, brother? I bet I could find you them doing a cooking segment.
Okay.
I don't think that would be the hardest thing in the world to find.
All right.
But yeah, try to find a genre that they did not dip their toes into with that concept.
Yeah. Wow.
And that, I believe, is the complete story of the Bradys. I might be missing something, but I think that's about it.
Except for Christopher Knight's foray into reality television.
That's right. Oh, okay. Well, here's the other spinoff.
Which didn't last, because he was like 20 years older than this.
Right.
Than
here's something, though, that probably bears mentioning, is the Annoyance Theater in Chicago, I think it was Chicago, I'm pretty sure, did the real-life Brady Bunch, where they basically took the scripts of the Bradys.
Wasn't Andy Richter part of that?
Oh, here's the thing. Yeah, it launched a whole bunch of people.
Okay.
Like, it was so incredibly popular. Melanie Hutsell got on Saturday Night Live, where she portrayed Jan, as she did on the show. Andy Richter was the dad.
Mm.
Jane Lynch was the mom.
Okay.
Carol. And so, yeah, it was such a popular show that almost everyone from
that
people. Show...
That's three people.
Yeah, and the rest I could...
And the rest.
That would be the Gilligan's Island Live. But yeah, it was an incredibly popular show. And there you go. Launched a whole bunch of comedy careers off of that.
Wow.
So I think that might be the full Brady. Might be done.
Wow.
And then when the dad died, that was the end of that. So really can't do anymore. because you feel sad yeah, not seeing the dad.
That's too bad. Yeah. And also, he did have a perm for a while.
He did have a perm. And if you ever read any of the books, like Growing Up Brady, maybe I read that book, that were written by Barry. Oh, I'm trying to remember his name. Not Barry Gibb. But it was the guy who played Greg. Boy, did he not like doing the show The Dad. Oh, boy. Complaints every week.
Oh, really?
Robert Reed. Yeah. Hated it. Completely, yeah.
I'm trying to think of the guy who played Greg, what his real name was.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was Chris Knight for Peter. Yeah. Mike Lookinland.
Yeah. I don't know anyone else's name. But for some reason, I only know the boys' names. Like I said, I looked on that side of the screen during the...
Yeah. You would only look to the one side
of the screen. Eve Plum, yeah, that's right. I couldn't have said it, though, if
I... Yeah. If you hadn't. And I think, as I've mentioned before, creepiest thing about the show, never mentioning their dead parents ever.
If they were dead. I personally believe that Mrs. Brady's husband was an abusive drunk and she left him with the girls.
Well, you remember the plot of the second Brady movie, right? Or did you see it?
I didn't see that. Is that really canon? Because they're more of a parody, right? They're more of a parody.
It's the only thing that mentions it. Here's what they did with the second movie and what they said. They had a guy show up who said, "It's me, your husband." And she's, "What? I thought you were dead. You were lost at sea."
Okay.
Like, no. But he was a con guy who was trying to get something from them or whatever. And then you find out that her husband that was lost at sea was a professor. And he went on a 3-hour cruise. And so.
Okay. Yeah. I get it.
It's the full Sherwood Schwartz.
It's right. Yep. Ties it all together with a nice little bow.
Ba-bing! There you go.
We need to talk about something else, though, because you know what? I've already done a title card with the Brady Bunch.
Okay.
So, as a sneaky bunch.
Yep. You haven't done anything with the Aquabells,
pretty witty. And
because we talked about both the Coen Brothers' new movie have aquatic dancers in them. So.
Nah, Coen Brothers, that's an ample. You're right. I don't need it. I can just use the Coen Brothers.
Change the topic, Dave. Go.
No, well, why are you throwing
change
it on
the topic,
me?
Dave?
Why are you throwing it on me? You know what I had to do at work the last few days is build a tank. Basically, we have these
a think tank.
Yes, and it's empty. We have a customer who buys from us, and they're based in Alaska.
Okay.
And apparently, whenever we send shipments to them, it arrives looking like it rolled down a hill, a long hill.
Do you know what's good to do is anchor things down. I've heard from that song, okay. Anchor Down in Anchorage.
Okay.
Are you familiar with that song?
No, I'm not.
It's a very popular song, Anchor Down in Anchorage.
Okay. Maybe I must have missed it. I was not paying attention that week. And
when you're anchored down in Anchorage,
so we had to
Alaska. Go ahead.
No, you go on.
No, that's basically the whole song.
Oh, that's the whole song. Okay. So we had to build these. I had to design a dunnage wrap for doors that was indestructible. Ooh. That was my brief.
Okay.
Like the... Which is hard because we have limited, you know, I can't make it out of metal. So, you know, it's wood, which is destructible.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say I can't be destructed, then you give me wood to make it with. I'm like, okay, tie one hand around my back. That makes sense?
I don't know. Get tied up by your friends with benefits, whatever way you want.
Tie a yellow ribbon behind my back. And so then I think I made a pretty good, like what I made was I took pieces of plywood.
Right.
And I screwed 2x4s to it on both sides. And then they hung down lower than so then we put cleats on them. So now they're supported. So there's no excuse for them to smash into them with a forklift.
Okay.
Because they're elevated.
The cleats,
they're elevated. And then, I took these plywood things, used some nylon wrap just to quickly kind of put it together. And so they have basically waste doors on the top and bottom. Plywood on the sides.
Okay.
And then because I put this 2x4s on either end as well, I was able to screw plywood onto that side as well.
All right. Okay.
So it was like a big coffin for the doors.
Yeah. All right.
And then I took metal strapping and I strapped metal around all the cleats and then two around in between them. Then I strapped around the whole thing from like side to side, basically in a big circle on the top and bottom. And then I strapped that again.
Oh my gosh.
And that's how they left. So I am hoping... I have my fingers crossed. I left today.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that I'll hear some good news that they arrive without
looking
like
they're going through customs,
were in a car accident.
Does customs just go, we don't want to open that? Or what do they do? Like, do they just take your word for it that this is all legit?
I guess so.
I guess they must. Interesting. I wonder, just because, you know, so often when I get packages, they've been like torn open a little bit by customs.
Yeah.
And if you've done something to make the indestructible container, you know, does that make customs go, whoa.
Wait a second.
Yeah, hold it.
What are you shipping
Let's ultrasound this baby.
Yeah, I guess. I suppose. I don't know. Maybe it's different.
You're a trustworthy business, probably, who ships out internationally anyway.
That's the thing. I mean, if it's business to business, it's different than,
right.
You know,
business. People don't tear open your Amazon boxes all the time because, you know, they go Amazon is legit.
I've never had an Amazon box opened,
okay,
to be honest with you. Have you ever had one opened?
No, not that I can think of.
Even ones that came across the border, I haven't. In the old days, before there was...
Now, is that the farthest that you guys ship?
Yeah, yeah. Because we're a branch, so we're the BC branch, and so we don't need to ship. Because there's one in Alberta, there's one in Saskatchewan, there's one in Ontario. So we don't need to ship that far, right? So it's really...
And BC, we're just underneath Alaska.
Exactly.
When they flush their toilets, the ice cubes show up at our place, and we go like, ugh.
Why are these here?
Yeah. Someone flushed a toilet in Alaska. Yeah. God damn it.
That one person.
Yep.
So yeah, it was kind of exciting. It was kind of fun. But the weird thing is, it was basically, it took me, I guess I started at around, say, let's say I started at 1 o'clock on whatever day that was. Wednesday? No, sure. Tuesday.
Tuesday. Wait, did you have ash on your head? If so, it might have been Wednesday.
Nope. Okay. Not yet. No, because Wednesday wouldn't have had ash till later in the day. But then on Wednesday, it was all day. I basically finished it at the end of the day. It was just two dunnage wraps and a bock, a big crate. And it took me so much to do. I was just like, is this really like cost effective? Or what are we doing here? Like, I hope they're paying for this. We used a million screws for this stupid thing. But I hope they enjoy it.
Cool. When you were saying it sounded like the kind of thing you'd like have Hannibal Lecter in. Like if you gotta like keep a person trapped in there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Ryan Reynolds was inside the box.
Oh, cool.
I was shipping him to Alaska.
Oh, okay.
Finally. Get rid of that guy.
Yeah, it's about time. If it's a movie, then the best thing to keep your villain in is a transparent box.
Well, we all know that.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of boring if it's a box that you can't see the actor in.
And yet the transparent box seems to be the one that they all get out of very, very easily.
Yeah.
Except possibly, slight spoilers, in the last Mission Impossible movie. Where I'm like, oh, they got the guy in a transparent box. Well, that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we don't know.
We all know how this goes.
But like a Coen Brothers movie, it ended before we knew what was going to happen with that box.
Can you just do that? Like, how many movies that are good do you have to do before people go, do whatever you want. Do whatever you want. And then how many times do you have to abuse it, like M. Night Shyamalan, before they go, whoa, buddy, that's enough of that. And now you got to end your movie proper.
Yeah.
You can't just Lady in the Lake It or whatever. You can't just do that. You can't have
Lady in the Water.
Lady in the Water. You can't just have a guy show up at the end and go, oh, I can solve this problem. Who are you? I just showed up. What? No, not at all.
I have to admit, I haven't seen that film.
Okay, well, let's just say something shows up that you go like, oh, that solved that problem. Great.
Do you think it's bad if, thinking of the Coen Brothers, do you think it's bad if a movie ends without, like ends in a question mark or ends kind of?
What type of movie are you making?
Well, let's say not a comedy.
If you're making a suspenseful film, I guess, but you don't give the audience any relief. You know, it's like suspense, 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 and maybe something happened. Maybe it didn't. Maybe the bomb went off. Maybe it didn't.
What about like a horror film where you're not sure that they think they've solved the problem and it's not?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't.
Do you like that?
Well, you know what I'm sick of in a horror movie is the everything you did was a waste of time. And now, you know, you see the monster show up at the end. It's just so fucking hack, you know, that I'd probably prefer over that.
Mm.
You know, anytime you just go and you just, you did everything, right? You killed Dracula. You put holy water in his mouth. You put him in the sun. You chopped up his bones. But here's his shadow and it's going to kill you. It's fuck off. You know, if it was like maybe... he'll come back, maybe. Yeah, I guess it's okay. But I don't think it works with comedy. I think comedy without a punchline isn't a comedy. That's the thing you really do need.
I guess so.
It's like a porno without sex.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not fun. What about... yeah, because you're right. Like an action film wouldn't really work. Although The Thing is great. But is that more of a horror film than an action movie? I guess it's more of a horror film. I think I love The Thing and how it ends. You don't know who... yep. Or if either of them are The Thing.
But you had enough satisfaction, I think, with the characters.
Yeah.
You saw enough... that you were full. You're like, by the end of it, you're like, num, 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 I'm full up. That was good. Thank you. Num, num, num.
Yeah.
And I think with sometimes with the Coen Brothers stuff, you're like, I'm not quite full. I wanted to finish that meal.
Yeah.
No, I'm taking the plate away. But I'm not done. I haven't even tried the steak.
Yeah.
Well, no, you don't try the steak. You had some salad. Okay, fine, Coen Brothers. There you are. Whereas I look at someone like a Sam Raimi and just go, you know, those guys all start at the same time, but it feels like Sam Raimi... still comes ready to deliver and over-deliver with what he does.
Yeah. Although, no, I guess so.
What was the one he did? The Simple Plan? He did that, right?
I like that film.
Yeah, I like it too. You know, that felt like, you know, not all, he didn't use any of the bells and whistles really, mm-hmm. but still like, yeah, it delivered. You felt satisfied. You don't come out of a Sam Raimi movie going, he kind of half-assed that one.
What about Drag Me to Hell?
Well, no, I don't like the choice they made.
Yeah.
But he fucking went for it.
He sure did. You know? Yeah, yeah. I agree with you there. If you, how would you say that film is basically about a person who makes one mistake and pays for it with their life in the most horrible way you can imagine. You know, not only do they die, but they are tormented to death, you know?
Well,
it's
not for that. They're not tormented for that thing. They're tormented because someone decided to make them tormented.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing because it falls under the same kind of hell rules as Hellraiser.
Okay.
Okay, Hellraiser, you know, the first Hellraiser is it's your obsession that opens the door to this world of, you know, pleasure and pain and what have you. And that's what hell is. It's not the traditional, you're going there because of your sins or you sold your soul to the devil.
I always thought it was about hell's childhood.
That's what it is. Everyone? You're all okay? All right, good. And then in later films, basically, it was just like, if you're a boob that like opens the box, well, then now you're in hell forever.
You get,
fucking hell's not fair, and it's just random, and it's like a hole that you fall into. Mm. It's like, who cares? It means nothing then if it's just random and bullshit.
Yeah.
And the Drag Me to Hell, it's almost like, you know, his Evil Dead. You know, it's like people don't get killed in Evil Dead because they're bad.
Yeah.
They just, wrong place, wrong time. Now you
well,
go.
Well, they made a, one of them made a choice.
Who did?
To do something dangerous.
Who did?
Turns on the reads from the book or turns on the tape recorder.
How do they know that's wrong? They turned on a tape recorder.
That's true. You're right.
That's not.
I would do that too.
Yeah. And because of that, everyone but like one character gets, you know, killed and possibly taken to hell. Because there are like, you see ghosts going like, you know, my soul's being torn apart and all this kind of stuff. So basically the after, you know, whatever is hell or the other realm in the Evil Dead universe and in the Drag Me to Hell universe, it's nothing to do with fairness or judgment or whatever. It's just if, you know, someone sends you there, then you're there. And so it's all bullshit to me. Like, it's like, well, then there's no point to it.
But Evil Dead ends that way.
There's no rules, really.
Evil Dead ends with no one wins.
Yeah,
no,
all of them do. Like, the whole world, like the Ash TV series this season, innocent people die. A kid dies, you know, who, nothing. There's no reason for him to die guilty-wise. It's just like, yep, wrong place, wrong time. This thing is evil and it'll kill you. And there you go. Then that's the thing. And why do you survive? I don't know. You might figure it out, but you might not. It's all random. Who cares? You know, so by the end of it, like, what's the satisfaction? You see some good visuals. It's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the thing I liked in the Ash series this season was him basically figuring out that if you have people and they show up, they're going to get killed. So I'm not going to bring people along.
Yeah.
And then they make the choice to show up.
Yeah.
And so bad shit goes down.
Yeah.
But like, he's like, no, I'm going to just take this on myself because I know how this shit works. It's all random. It's not, you know, good people. Yeah. It's not bad people. It's just this.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, and if you got a horror movie like that, I don't know. Sometimes that's just, I think they did it well in the Ash thing. I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kept my interest. But in Drag Me to Hell, it was just, when you start off with like a kid being damned forever, and then you have a thing where one of the demons says to the girl, basically, I'm going to rape you. Well, then fuck off. You know, then it's like this thing, you know, he's probably raping the boy as well. You know, that boy is in this realm. So that's not fair. So there's this imbalance in justice that you've put in this. And it's like, well, then everything's fucked.
Mm.
So it's all fucked. Yeah. So throw up your hands and everything's fucked.
Yeah.
And there you go. And you can enjoy the visuals. But yeah, everything's fucked. It's fine. It's fine. Go ahead. It's pretty. It's interesting. It's kind of like a comedy. But there's no justice. And so no peace. you don't get that satisfaction,
mm-hmm. and you want justice in all the films that you watch.
I want some set of rules and reasons, like the idea of with Hellraiser, that obsession was what takes you to this realm of extreme experiences. That feels like it connects enough with drugs and thrill seeking and that kind of, that works to me. That makes some sense. Yeah. I get it. And then, you know, this world feeds on that kind of thing. All right, I'm with you. All right, I got you. And then it's just like, it's just a thing. You open a box and this kind of shit happens. It's like, okay. You're going with the idea that random shit happens to people and it kills them. It's like, yeah, that's true. But who the fuck cares? or like something like a Final Destination. All the Final Destination movies, they're all just, you know, Rube Goldberg ways of killing people.
Yes.
But the concept behind that is the one person always sees, oh, this is how we're going to die. I should not go on to this thing. Let's all get off that thing.
Yeah.
Oh, you're all saved, but death wants you. So it's going to kill you anyway. Well, thank you, movie that meant nothing then.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like justice there, does it?
Yeah.
It's an excuse to watch people die. Kind of like the Saw movies.
And I haven't really seen, well, the Saw movies almost make sense, but let's get that in a second. Like the thing that I don't think they address in the films, and to be fair, I have not watched all of the Final Destination films, is every one of the people before this happens sees a vision of the horrible death and then says, no, who's giving you that vision? Because it seems like there's another side of this that's trying to save you.
Yeah.
Where's that fucker go after the first 10 minutes? Maybe that thing should be at war with the thing that's trying to kill you. So you always see something before the bad thing happens, and you've got to figure out what it is. Like you see a light bulb and you're like, oh, what? So that means I've got to avoid light bulbs, or I need a light bulb, or shit, what is it? And you've got to figure it out. And so the audience gets to figure it out with you instead of going, I'm going to get laser surgery on my eyes. Well, I know where this is going to go after that battery rolls down a thing and hits the doll and it flips in the bucket. Fuck.
I haven't watched those films.
Anyway, that's what that is. The Saw films are basically based on a guy who goes, people aren't, don't. It's a guy who's got a horrible disease, as far as I remember, a horrible disease, and he feels that all these people aren't appreciating life. They don't value what they've got, and so he's punishing them for not valuing what they have.
Does he have water on the knee?
Yes, he does.
That's what he's suffering
from?
Yes,
it's water on the knee. He's got a little, tiny bit of psoriasis.
How I suffer. All the world must pay for this. Yeah.
In the second film, he's got pink eye, and just gets so mad. He's just like, I wash my hands all the time. How could I possibly have this? Now, horror movies are a tricky thing. I mean, you can go with the randomness of life thing, and it's like, yes, life's random, and horrible thing can happen to you. Or there could be justice.
Yeah.
You know, and that maybe, you get what you, Twilight Zone-y, you get what you deserve.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer the get what you deserve stories, but that's me. How about you?
I don't know. How many films do people get what they deserve? I mean, I don't really. Well, horror.
The villains usually get what they deserve in most action movies.
I just watched It Follows.
Okay.
I know the plot. The newish horror film.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. It kind of cheats itself in that it kind of changes what the monster does in the film.
Mm-hmm.
It's strange. It did it almost right from the beginning. And you're like, well, what are the rules? You just did something different and now you're introducing rules for me to follow for the rest of the film. And you changed the rules again. Oh, strange. But it's interesting because that film, it's almost like this guy said, I'm going to make a movie that's like the most blatant sexually transmitted disease horror film you've ever seen in your life.
Because
that's all the film is.
Right.
Because that's how it's transmitted. You know? It's like, but it's not body horror like, say, David Cronenberg would do.
Right.
It's like this weird sort of like, what would you call it? Like impending doom for what you did. That's so terrible because you had sex. You know, like, and it feels really odd. It feels sort of like this strange harks back to the good old days of Friday the 13th. If you're crazy enough to have sex with a beautiful girl, look out.
But you immediately get killed there.
Yes.
Whereas this one, I think you've got an ethical choice to make.
That's part of it too.
And that is kind of like, that's the old, press this button and someone you don't know and don't care about will die, but you will get a reward.
Yeah.
And, imagine instead of you get money, you will live.
Yeah.
The only way you live is if you push this button and someone you have never met will die. Would you push the button? As the death comes closer and closer, will you press the button?
Yeah.
And that's a good basis for a horror movie.
No, it is. It is good. I quite enjoyed it, but it has some odd moments where you're just kind of like, wait, why did that's not how it works? Because it's to give away a little bit, the creature or whatever it is, it never explains really. Whatever this force is, it follows. It's supposed to be like this slow walking, impending thing that's always chasing. No matter how far you drive, it will find you.
Right.
Even you might have a couple days before it catches up with you, but it will eventually catch up with you. And yet there's scenes in the film where, like, there's a scene where it's standing on the roof of the house. Just sort of, like, standing there as the characters drive away. Well, that's... No, it follows. It doesn't stand on a roof.
Yeah.
And in the beginning of the film...
And they can't see it. And it's just there. And it's...
Well, they don't notice it. But she can see it.
Right.
Like, it's only if you are cursed with it that you can see it. No one else can see the... They can see the effects of it, but not the thing. And then the very beginning of the film, this one character, he mentions a girl in a yellow dress, and the other person can't see it. So then he knows, oh, that's the creature. But it's not approaching him. It's there in this space, but it's not following him. It's not coming towards him.
Right.
You know, and the idea is it's always after you. It's always coming towards you. So yeah, that was odd. Like, so when a film does that, I kind of like, why can't you follow your own rules? Like from the beginning of the movie, like, but it has a great opening sequence, like a really good opening sequence. So, and there's some good stuff in the film. There's this kind of a dumb scene in near the end of it that I could see that the writer director was sort of amused by it, I suppose. But as a viewer, you're kind of like, well, what, you know, if this didn't work, why would they think this would work? You know, like,
yeah, I was thinking the other day we were talking about Blair Witch Project or something like the paranormal. What do you call it? What's that movie?
Paranormal Activity.
Paranormal Activity. Okay. And I was thinking about why do those movies work, even though you go, nothing happens.
They don't work. But
okay. But they do work because they sold incredible amounts of box. So people kept going and they kept coming back and they told their friends clearly. So something worked. Now, and I get...
I think horror films have become... They have kind of... To be a snob, I think the films have kind of devolved into jump scares. So if people know that if they go to the movie, a cat will jump out of a cupboard and scare them, they're all in. But if it's a movie that's a slow builder that has, you know, this sort of, creates tension and builds, it takes time to build up this, you know, horror of the film, people are more, you know, are bored by that.
Right.
You know, so a film that, I haven't seen it yet, but I've read a lot of good reviews of, it's a film called The Babadook, which is an Australian horror film. And I've read tons of good reviews of it, but I've also read tons of criticisms of it too. And basically the criticisms are, there's nothing that made me jump during the film. Like, it's not scary in that scary, you know, paranormal, something jumps out at you way, you know. And I think because people now, what they think of as horror is that video people give you of a room, and you stare at the room for a while, and then suddenly a monster's face jumps up into the video, and you go, ugh, and you jump back. That's replaced horror, you know. So instead of having a film that slowly builds up its tension, like The Exorcist, where it's just full of kind of weird, creepy things that kind of pile on until you're like, start sweating, and you don't know what's going on, and you get really nervous, and then, you know, or even just watching Mulholland Drive, a film like that, where it's just all these details that mount up until by the end of the film, you're just completely racked with this angsty feeling of, you know, fear. And it's just, but it's fear of life. It's not a fear of something, you know, of a pot falling out of the cupboard when you open it, you know, like that. That's not scary, really. I mean, it may make you jump, but it's sort of a cheap scare, right?
Though I think in Mulholland, I'll get back to my theory in a second on whatever, but Mulholland Drive, I think they give you enough legitimate creepy scares from all these different
angles. But it piles up, right?
Well, it piles up, but then you go like, something's coming next, and it's going to deliver like the rest of them. So now, I think what you want to do in a really good horror movie is this, is you give the audience a little something, and then you got to go, you take the audience, you know, as they say, to 8, and you let them go to 10 on their own.
Sure, yeah.
That's the scariest thing. Whereas the jump scares are 10. 10?
Yeah.
10. And it's a relief. You're in the audience. You go, ah, and it's fun. And you go, ah, well, I just had an adrenaline burst. And that feels good.
Yeah.
And everyone's here. And I'm clutching your best gal's hand. And, ah, boy, howdy, we're having a good time, eh?
She's got her hand in your popcorn bucket with your, you know, what's going on.
Is that a Mars bar? And so on and so forth. But you want the audience to go there. But I think like something like with the paranormal movies and the Blair Witch, what they did is they gave you a 3 and went, if you know horror movies, you're going to go to 10 already on your own. I don't need to take you to 8.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go this far. And so the enjoyment people have of watching those movies isn't necessarily the movies themselves.
Yeah.
Their enjoyment is what they're playing in their heads. They see, like, you're walking into a room and you see all the things in the room and you're thinking, oh, shit, that. But they're not really doing anything.
Yeah.
They just know you've seen enough horror movies.
Yeah.
That you're thinking it, so you're doing all the fucking heavy lifting. But at the end of the movie, if you liked it, you liked it because you scared yourself with the shit that scares you. And that's a really good trick if you can do it as a horror director. Is like, go make people fill in the blanks themselves. They'll fill it in with something darker than you could ever come up with.
Yeah.
But you've got to, like, off the top, give them a little, let me tell you how this all works. But
I watched some of
Paranormal. Fuck up the rules, fuck you then.
I watched some of Paranormal Activity. I got bored and turned it off.
Right, it's boring unless you're game.
And then Blair Witch Project, which I was really game for. We talked about it when Robin was on the show. I was really game for that movie. Like, I was all in.
Yeah.
100% in.
Yeah.
Roger Ebert talked about it on his show, and right. I heard his description of it, and I was like, this sounds
And Roger Ebert awesome. Had been dead for a year by that point, so this was his ghost saying it was scary.
No, he was
still around. Okay, yeah. Sorry. It'd be scarier if it was his ghost, so saying this is a scary
It would be
movie,
scary
right?
if it was... You're right, Ian. It would be very scary.
It's forcing your thumb to go up in the air?
Is Poltergeist controlling my thumb would yeah. be a much
really
like paranormal
scary,
activity.
Right?
It would be very scary, you're right. And so I went to see that film.
The thumb goes for your eye and you try to push it away.
That film to me is all come on and no payoff. Mm-hmm. And I guess maybe that's my problem with it, but it's not, it's an inept come on. It's not artfully done. It's, you know, at no time in that movie am I ever frightened, mm-hmm. ever in that film. Like I sat in that film in the theater. The only time there's a scary sequence in the film is when they're running through the house at the end of the movie, and I hope I'm not spoiling it for people. It's a 15-year-old movie. But they're running through the house, but they're going so fast that there's no time for you to be scared because everything's happening so quickly. You're just kind of like, okay, going down the stairs, going down the stairs, going down the stairs, going down the stairs.
Yeah.
Then they get to the room. There's a guy. Clunk, movie's over. And you're like, oh, okay. You know, that you might have had something scary there if it lasted maybe 15 minutes longer and you built it up and you had them going down the stairs and you had music playing and it was kind of scary. But because of the... the idea of the film, which is kind of interesting, is that the actors didn't know what was happening to them, and so they're not really acting. They're really reacting to stuff that was happening to them. But, you know, there's just like, there's no art to it. It's interesting, but there's no art.
It also was new.
Art needs to be contrived, you know?
Maybe. But I think, like, it was also such a new idea that, you know, the new is scary, too. If you have someone show you something legitimately new in horror on screen, you've got no defense to it. At that point, the normal defenses of just like, well, that's a set. Well, that's a this. Well, these are actors. Well, that doesn't look like a set. Well, this is.
I am easily scared. All right. I am super easily scared. That's why I like horror films, because they freak me out.
And that's why I do not like horror films.
They freak me the F out. And it's kind of fun for me. It's like going on a roller coaster. You go on a roller coaster because it might kill you. That's why you're on the roller coaster. You have the illusion of possible death.
Right.
You know, like when you go on the wooden roller coaster here in Vancouver, the P&E.
And do you remember the time that it broke and went backwards and someone's back got really hurt? Yes, of course you
remember. I didn't even know about that actually.
That did happen, yeah.
But when you're on it, though, when it's actually working, it's scary because you're not held in by over-the-head safety harness things that, you know, like clamp you into it. It's just a bar that's sitting across your lap. And so when you hit the bumpy parts and you fly up in the air and your bum hit leaves the seat and you think, I'm going to get thrown out, and then suddenly you're sitting back down again and then it happens again and you're like... This is terrifying because I might die. And then you're sitting down again. It's kind of fun, right? It has that illusion of peril. And so, same with horror films. It's the illusion of peril that you are the person in the film, that you are going through their experiences. You have, you know, put your hopes and dreams into this character and, oh my gosh, I hope they get through this. And then, Blair Witch Project just left me like that. And I was so... It was like the greatest idea for a movie I'd ever heard. And then when I watched it, I was like...
I think it's one of the reasons I liked the film. What's the one with the Quentin Tarantino movie with the car and...
Drive Angry.
No, that's Death Proof. The Nick Death Proof.
Yeah.
I'm not going to praise that. But I like how they set up, you know, it's like, here's the girls. You want, and you, because a horror movie, you want something to happen.
Yeah, that's
But when
great...
it happens, you feel like a shit.
Oh, yeah.
You feel
well, you
bad.
Don't like them.
What's
and
that?
Also, you don't like them because
you don't like them.
They're kind of bitchy. Like they're mean to a girl in the bar.
Yeah.
They're
and so
dicks
and so they've set up all
Mike.
The all yeah. the horror tropes of they've got it coming.
That's right.
And then when they have it coming, you see it coming and you see it happen. You go, oh, that's too much. I'm not on board with this. My, you know, oh shit. Mm-hmm. And like, well, what are you gonna do now? I feel crappy. And this is where most of the movies would end. It would be like, they had it coming, and there you go, and it's this unstoppable force. And then I like that they have four more show up and like, this is how you do it. And now they can take care of this. And then you see the unstoppable force revealed for what they really are. And most monsters, when you shine the light on them, are really just small little nothings.
Yeah.
And I love that. I thought
it's a weird twist on the very popular rape revenge films of the 70s, like I Spit on Your Grave or Last House on the Left.
But with those ones, it's almost always that, you know, they knew the person. It's the mom getting revenge for what happened to the daughter.
I Spit on Your Grave, it's the actual victim who gets revenge.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, but there's a connection, you know, and instead it's like this guy trying it again.
Yeah, yeah, no.
And it's like, let's do this movie again.
I said it's an interesting twist.
Yeah, but the twist of like, you don't Yeah, it'd be like if you had a Friday the 13th movie and Jason slaughters the whole camp, mm-hmm. and then you go, let's see the next summer.
Yeah.
And then all these people are fucking sensible, and they just, and Jason's, I gotta get out of here. These guys are coming after me. I'm a scared.
Madly roaring across the lake in his hockey mask.
I wish I had the rest of my hockey equipment. Why'd I just keep the mask? Oh, jeez. I don't even like camp. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. No, it's it is good. But Death Proof isn't really a horror film. It's more of a revenge fantasy film. You know?
True.
You know, kind of like Inglourious Basterds. It's a revenge fantasy film.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like Django Unchained. It's a revenge fantasy film.
Kind of like Hateful Eight.
It's another. I haven't seen it. Is that another revenge fantasy film? It seems like that's.
I don't know. Is that only maybe one it is. Maybe it is.
You don't want to tell me. You. Okay. All right. I have to see it. I do need to see that film.
Name a.
It's a first Quentin Tarantino film. If I miss it in the theater, that I have not seen in the theater.
Okay. Name a Quentin Tarantino movie that doesn't involve revenge in some way. Go.
Jackie Brown.
Doesn't she get to get revenge?
Oh, I guess she does. Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
Doesn't have revenge.
It's definitely revenge in.
Reservoir. You're right. Yeah. Kill Bill, revenge. Yeah, I guess it's a thing that he likes a lot.
You know what? There actually isn't revenge in Death Proof. There just is.
He gets that's coming. Right. Yeah, you're right. He gets what's coming. It's our revenge as the viewer who got visually raped by him when that horrible accident happens. We're like, yeah, because that, you know, Quentin Tarantino really sets you as the viewer up. Like that, and I would recommend watching that film in its original Grindhouse version, not the extended.
With the missing reel.
I don't like the extra stuff, extra scene, the black and white scene in the standalone version of.
I don't think I've seen the standalone version.
Yeah, I don't bother because it's better. The Grindhouse version is better.
Fair enough.
But that's a really well done. That's that film. I just like how he's just love the setup, like making you dislike the characters because they are kind of, I don't know, they're kind of unlikable.
Right.
The girls, and so you know it's not even that you. Yeah, I guess you are in a way. You're kind of like, oh boy, when they get to that cabin, things are gonna happen there.
Yeah. Well, I think going back to what I was saying about like going from 8 to 10 and leaving the audience, you know, doing your thing. Yeah. I think that's the thing with almost all good art is it leaves room for the cream and the coffee. Like, let's leave a little room for the cream. Let the audience supply the cream. And if you're a comedian, you see the comedians who. Are okay, but not great.
Yeah.
Who are talking constantly, and they're constantly getting laughs, and they're constantly getting laughs. And then you see the ones that are really confident,
mm-hmm.
and they take the pauses,
yeah.
and they'll just do a setup, and they'll let the audience go and do their thing first. Now I'm going to deliver on this.
Yeah.
Now just wait for it. Here it comes. And, you know, maybe it's going where you were going, maybe it wasn't, or you leave it open and let them fill. I mean, that's the best thing, when you can leave it open and let the audience write the punchline in their own head, and oh, they love it. They're fucking delighted by that.
Huh.
You know, how many times have we talked about fucking Watchmen here? But like the thing that people who read it all at once don't get is you're at the end of Watchmen, like reading the individual issues, and now you're writing what happens next in your own head.
Oh, we spent so much time trying to figure out.
So much time. So much fun doing that,
yeah,
right?
Every month we really have these long discussions.
Yeah, what is it going to be?
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, that's just a fucking delight. Then when they come on with when the next issue comes, and it's not that.
But what's great is it didn't disappoint too, though, except for the ending for me. But it didn't disappoint, you know, like you every time you got to the next issue, you were like, oh, this is great. You know,
yeah, where it's you got and because you got that little space. And I think when you watch it, especially as a movie, they leave you no space to think like, oh, what's Rorschach going to do now that he's in prison?
Mm.
Oh, my gosh, that's oh, shit. Mm. He's screwed.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wait, how about that? Oh, no. No, just like, well, let's just wait 5 minutes and see. He threw stuff at the guy's face. Well, he took care of that.
But
no
you get
room,
that from the
no
movie.
No room to make up your own stuff.
You get that from the movie, and you get it by treating what was a comic series as a graphic novel.
Yeah,
you know?
Play it too straight. But I think that's the Coens now take it too far, where they're just like, we're going to just give you a 2, but it'll be a beautiful 2.
Mm.
You take it to 10 on your way home, if you want. Go for it. You figure out what happened, maybe.
Yeah. It's too loose.
And try and figure out why we made who traditionally would be the villain the hero, mm-hmm. and traditionally would be the hero the villain.
Mm.
You know, enjoy.
Have some fun with that.
Have some fun with enjoying why we flipped all that around. Does that feel weird that we did that? Because it feels a little weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is this a completely bizarro universe? I don't know.
Would they be good at directing a horror movie?
Yeah, it'd be scary as hell. Do you know who's going to be really good, though, at directing the horror movie is Key and Peele are doing a horror movie, and boy, howdy, they're going to be good.
Are they?
Oh, shit, yeah. Oh, my God.
Why is it going to be good?
Because their comedy already has a lot of creepy elements in it. They know how to like pull those strings.
Yeah.
And they've got enough confidence that they don't mind just being a little weird. And they don't just these little things they do where they'll occasionally just turn slowly to the audience and just look at the audience. And it's just the creepiest thing in the world to me. Huh. Oh, my God. Huh. You saw their trailer for Keanu,
yes,
right?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Okay. But yeah, they got a horror movie coming after. What did you think of the trailer for Keanu?
I thought it looked pretty good. I hope all the jokes aren't in the trailer.
I don't think
so. They had one of those sort of feelings like,
they seem very generous with their comedy for the most part. I doubt that we're going to be seeing
it all seems of like that stuff. A lot of the same similar jokes though in the trailer. So that's sort of playing, you know, their middle class blackness against the urban blackness was a big common.
And the kitten dressed as a gangster.
That's kind of fun.
Oh man, the kitten. Just
I'm
doing
looking
action
forward.
Scenes.
We'll be seeing that film. Yeah. No lie, because I do like them a lot.
I bet you though that their horror movie is going to be scary, and I may actually have to see it because I like them so much, which bugs me because I don't want to see a horror movie, but I'm going to have to.
Is it a Scary Movie 5? Is that what they're doing?
Scary. Will I have to go 5? And they're going to take me to 5?
They're doing the fifth version of they're doing the fifth in the series of Scary Movie. Sweet.
First of all, I think they've gone way past 5.
Oh, sorry.
And also, yeah. Oh, geez. I think they've moved on, the Scary Movie guys, they did the 50 Shades of Black.
Oh, okay.
It's not gray. Dave.
No. Wait, what is it?
Black.
Oh.
Stop it. What kind of...
Wait a second. Do black people do this? But white people do this? Is that what I'm learning?
Something.
Oh, great.
There's something.
Am I wrong? But was the first Scary Movie, was it kind of funny?
Yeah, it was all right.
Had its time. Had a moment.
I think the first Scary Movie involved at least one of the directors from Airplane.
Oh, did it?
And I don't think the guy who went really right wing. I think it was one of the other ones. One of the Zuckers that didn't go all.
Is that what happens to people?
What happens? Not to all people. Some people.
Is that what happens to people when we get older? Do we just become?
No, I think sometimes you take do the full Dennis Miller, and sometimes you don't. Sometimes you stay how you are, or you become more. You become Louis C.K. You know, when you get older, or you become Dennis Miller, or you can become that Zucker, or you can become that Zucker.
You don't know what Louis C.K. thinks. He could be Dennis Miller.
Yeah, but
he doesn't say.
I don't care what people think. I care what they do. You know, okay. Who cares? If you can think I'm an asshole, but you're really nice to me, I'll be fine with that. That's all right. We're all doing that, right? You're all you're biting your tongue throughout the day at certain things, right?
Yeah.
That's how we get through life.
Through this whole show.
Yeah, maybe you should wrap it up.
Everybody, thank you for listening to Sneaky Dragon. We appreciate your feedback.
Do we? Or is Dave just saying that?
Maybe I'm speaking on the side of my face. What is that when you're double? Anyway.
Are you thinking of Two-Face, the Batman villain?
I was not, but now that you said that, I'll go for it. Everybody, we'd love to hear from you. We have a message board at our website, sneakydragon.com. You can leave comments there about our show and tell us how brilliant we are. We appreciate that.
Or sexy photos, but we won't put those up.
We won't put up the sexy photos. We'll fondle them at home. You can also contact us by email.
Or at work with his friends with benefits.
You can also contact us by email at sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. That is our email that is attached to our website.
Yep.
And we appreciate getting emails from you. In fact, we love it.
We had one from a person today who said they would friend us on, or they would like us on Facebook, except they hate Facebook.
Oh.
So they won't.
Well.
But if someone doesn't, what could they do, Dave?
If they hate Facebook, they shouldn't go to our Facebook page, Sneaky Dragon. If they dislike Twitter, which seems to be a common theme these days,
mm-hmm.
if they dislike Twitter, they should not follow us at follow us at, I'm going to edit that out. I'm going to say it all over again, okay?
Okay.
They can snollow us at Fiki_Dragolin.
Yep.
And they can...
At Fecal.
Fecal _
Sneaky
Matter.
Sneaky Fecal.
Sneaky _ Matter.
Sneaky _ Dragon. That's how it is.
It's too late.
All right.
I thought everyone knew this. I thought we talked about this long time ago. But apparently it was a major bit of news that we have a Tumblr page. Sneaky Dragon.
Because that's what's popular nowadays, which is great that we didn't mention that for, I don't know, almost 4 years. That's the popular thing now.
As soon as we started the show, we got a Tumblr
page. It's the thing that's influencing movies. It's the thing that's influencing culture. Don't even bring it up.
Okay. I'll put more stuff on it, I guess.
All right.
But I feel like I used to put stuff in all the time, and then nothing ever came of it. So I just thought, forget it.
No, the important thing then is to give up. If at first you don't succeed,
you know what?
Meh.
There are so many hours in the day.
How many?
the 24.
Dave, you've got an extra damn day this year.
I sleep.
It's a leap year.
I sleep 23.
How many extra hours is that in this year?
That's, well, 24 extra hours.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of extra time this year.
I sleep 23 hours a day.
Right.
So I have very little time.
You are a lion.
I am a lion?
You go to work, you kill something.
I thought you were calling me a liar.
No, you're a lion. you kill something and then you take a 23-hour nap.
Yeah.
And you're incredibly warm to the touch.
Yes, to my friends with benefits.
Yeah. And you keep telling me that one day everything that the light touches will be mine.
Is that right? That's a reference to The Lion King, I think. Is it?
No, that's the MGM lion. That's what he would say before every movie. It's like, hey, everybody.
Ars gratia artis. All right. That's all for the show. I think, did I not summarize everything? Let me just check.
Yeah.
Checklist. Twitter?
Yeah.
Sneaky_dragon. Facebook? Sneaky Dragon. Comments on our Facebook.
Right.
Comments on our website.
Right.
Sneakydragon.com. Email?
Mm-hmm.
SneakyD@SneakyDragon.com.
Right.
Tumblr page.
Right.
Our ancient creaky Tumblr page.
Right. And the sneaky fecal, which is where you toss poop, and that's connected with MailChimp.
That's part of LinkedIn. Okay, everyone. Thank you for listening to the show this week, and because missing LinkedIn, that's what I'll be part of.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, come with that.
Give me
ending
that.
Ending strong.
Good.
Sticking
that
the landing good. In that you were impaled on a stick when you landed.
Fail. Major fail. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Bye.